Okay, guys, well, thanks for listening to me speak. I don't usually stand when I speak. And the baby's like, why is everybody listening? What's going on here? So we're going to talk about suffering today, which is sort of the easiest topic. In fact, when I told a friend, they said, oh, what are you talking on in Norway? And I said, oh, I'm speaking on suffering. And she said, that's a terrible topic. And I said, well, you know, it can be. But I appreciate that Steve has connected suffering to joy in kind of planning this series, because I think it also can be a really important topic. So we're going to just be using one verse today, that's it. We'll come back to this verse a few times. But we're also going to talk about a very bad week I had in 2021. So a very bad week, part one. This was my flat that I lived in before I got married to Jim. I lived there for 8 years. One night, in the middle of the night, I was lying in this nice bed and kind of happily laying there. And I thought I saw something in the corner of my eye. And I'm kind of a person that is, like, not scared of the dark, but, like, mildly alarmed easily. I thought, it's probably nothing. So I just was like, okay, I'm fine. And I went back to sleep. And it was a hot summer night, so I didn't have any sheets over me. Americans usually wear a top sheet. I closed my eyes, and then something bites my leg. And I was like, oh my goodness, that really hurt. I have this big bite on my leg, so I pop awake, and I turn on the light, and I have a bat stuck to my leg. But there's not just a bat stuck to my leg. There's two other bats flying around the room. And I'm in this place that I love. So I don't know what to do, and I start yelling. Unfortunately, I have these terrible neighbors that live above me. They had moved in, maybe 8 months before. I'd always had good neighbors. And they would party until 3 or 4 in the morning. And it was so loud that the music would shake pictures off my walls and such. But this is the first time I was ever thankful for my neighbors. Because I start yelling. They have never heard me make noise, ever. I'm always knocking, it was COVID, so I was always knocking on the door saying, I'm teaching, do you mind stop fighting? You know, can you take on the noise a little bit? One time one of my students asked me, are you safe, Dr. Peterson? Because it was so loud and there's so much screaming. So I went out in the hallway and they had heard me scream and they came out in the hallway. And they helped me rig the system to get the bats out. But the next morning I went to the hospital. It turns out I should have gone that night. And I had to have rabies shots for 5 months. Because bats don't usually bite people. Mm-hmm. And 25% of them have rabies in Michigan. This was the beginning of my rabies shots. And it ended up being quite a dramatic thing because also in Michigan, I didn't know bats are protected species. So you cannot, you can't
shoot them.
You can neither shoot them, but nor if they've made a home in your house in an off season, you cannot protect against it. So you can't put something in your house so they won't come back. We couldn't fix the hole where the bats had gotten in officially. I did end up getting on the roof and fixing it myself and figuring I don't care because I had more bad experiences. But, okay, so that's the start of this week. And there will be more things that will happen. I wanted to start there because, here you go. Here's the bat. Now you can see. That's what a bat looks like if you've never seen a bat up close.
That's a nasty little creature.
And their teeth are actually really big. When it bit into me, it was quite a thing. So you'll see some kind of language stuff here. We're going to start there though, because that's how suffering often feels. It comes out of nowhere and it attacks us. We're going to just go back to this verse. I'm going to read the whole thing for you, and then we'll go through it bit by bit. But consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So you can see this first section. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. I'm going to go back here. We're going to take the Consider It Pure Joy and talk about that in a minute. This is the Consider It Pure Joy is kind of the opening phrase, but whenever you face trials of many kinds, is what's called a conditional phrase. Okay, this is some English grammar for you I teach. And so this conditional phrase is important because when are we supposed to consider it pure joy? We're given a conditional phrase, when we're supposed to do that. And it's whenever we face trials. So we'll start with that. Whenever, the word whenever, I assumed that word whenever meant like any time, but actually in the Greek, it means as soon as. So right away when you face trials, consider it pure joy, which is kind of an interesting and a little bit different read on it. This is the word I want to focus on for a minute. And I've given you just the Greek here. I won't pronounce them. My husband could. But face, the word face in Greek is actually closer to fall into or are struck. So I like that a little better because when I think about the word face, I think like, I'm going to go bravely stand and walk up to this thing and face it, and, you know, I make some sort of choice. But actually for trials, we usually don't make any choice at all. They often just strike us, like that bat struck me. It comes out of nowhere. Trials come out of nowhere and they attack us. And you saw my little bedroom there. It was like a nice, quiet life, okay? I have this nice, quiet, cozy place. It says, let's get cozy, and it is well with my soul. It is not well with my soul when the bat bit me. This is like the things got less well real quick. And suffering leaves us lost in the dark.
Did it bit you?
Yeah, it bit me. Suffering leaves us feeling lost in the dark. And that's how I felt then. I felt very lost, like something is biting me, and my quiet life has been disrupted. And I just want to take like 30 seconds. I'm going to do this a couple times during this talk. So just think to yourself of some moment in time that you've had where you felt a little lost in the dark. Okay, we're not going to talk about these, but I just want you to kind of connect. We heard about a few of those last night in people's testimonies. But some moment when you felt lost in the dark. I think as Christians, sometimes we can go wrong or go a little bit off the path when we talk about suffering. And there's several ways. And one of those ways is that we minimize suffering. And so we can say, I find my English friends sometimes do this, maybe more than Americans. It's not really a big deal. So even though this thing happened, it doesn't really matter. That can be one way. We can minimize. Or we can do that with other people, like, heaven is your home. Or when someone dies, saying something like, oh, they're going to be an angel in heaven. It's bad theology, but also it doesn't help somebody with their suffering to say, like, oh, you know, that will be the case. I think we also sometimes hide our suffering. So we tell no one or we suffer in silence. That can be another thing that we do as Christians. Feeling like, well, I have to be Christian. I have to, you know, present this sort of joyful self all the time, and so I'm going to hide my suffering. And then I think a third kind of risk that we have as Christians is to feel hopeless in suffering, and that also is a problem. So I think we shouldn't minimize, we shouldn't hide, and we shouldn't feel hopeless. The Bible does, or the Bible recommends none of those things. So as we kind of move along in the passage, so we've talked about this first part, we're going to face trials. So the Bible talks about them right away. It doesn't give you, it doesn't say we're going to kind of hide these things. In fact, we have an enemy, the Bible says in John 10:10, who comes to steal and kill and destroy. Okay? So there's a battle raging all of the time between light and darkness. And sometimes it's easy to forget that. Or sometimes it's easy for me to forget that as I go through my daily life. So suffering will happen. It says whenever you face trials of many kinds. So that's a given that it's going to happen. Suffering is going to happen. We don't have to seek it out. But we also, as Christians, don't structure our lives to avoid suffering. So this passage suggests suffering is going to happen, and there's something we can do about it. But the thing we don't do necessarily is to avoid it. I'm going to just read you a quote that I was listening to a podcast recently. And one of the things that this speaker, Kurt Thompson, said is he said, turning away from suffering is really turning away from God. Because Jesus is waiting for us in the rooms of our suffering. So turning away from suffering is really turning away from God, because Jesus is waiting for us in the rooms of our suffering. And I know, at least in the U.S., we've built almost a whole culture on avoiding suffering, okay? What can we do to get out of anything that's hard or painful or hurts or could potentially be painful? Some people I know avoid... I have a good friend that avoids relationships. She probably wouldn't say this is what she's doing, but I can see that's what she's doing, because she got hurt once by a boyfriend. And so she thinks every man will hurt her. So she is not going to get into that place again. So, you know, she's avoiding those relationships. And I think sometimes people even avoid risking talking about Jesus with their friends, because it might make it awkward, or it might make it difficult. So I think there's this kind of, at least where I'm coming from, and I don't know everybody's culture, but there can be this kind of avoidance of suffering and escape into other things. It might be video games where we escape into, or it might be books for someone like me wearing a book t-shirt, or it could be TV, or it could be shopping, or it could be anything, okay? But we see right in the verse right away is that the route is not to escape it. Okay. So there's one more word, though, to consider, to think about, and it's the word consider. And so we have this, whenever you face trials, consider. So I'm putting that kind of passive second section first. So the word consider in the Greek, and if you're a person that's like, how in the world do I look into the Greek if I don't know Greek? There's a website called the Blue Letter Bible that will give you some kind of helpful tools to look at the Greek and figure out, okay, this is like some multiple meanings. So that's just a thought, just giving you kind of, so these, some of these pictures are from the Blue Letter Bible, okay? Just a place to go. And to open up the scripture a little bit and help you see other kind of possibilities. So the word consider in the Greek has some other interpretations besides consider. One of those is be led. And then another phrase is, let this guide you. And I really like that phrase. So whenever you face trials, let this guide you. That says more to me than the word consider. It says, let this be a path. So there's a path forward for us. So I think about, you know, hiking out on the trail. We most of us went hiking the other day. And there were signs that led us. Do we go left or do we go right? Okay, and those signs were important. They guided us and they helped us know, you know, which way to go. And this is key. So as I mentioned before, oftentimes when we consider suffering, I would say a conventional view of suffering or the world's view of suffering is that we are lost in the dark. It's just darkness. We don't know what to do about it. But in God's kingdom, God's kind of upside-down kingdom, he is saying, let this guide you. Let this be a path to follow. I'm going to give you a path to follow in the midst of suffering. Okay? And we're going to talk about the path through this verse, but that's pretty key. So you don't have to avoid suffering. You don't have to go into suffering blindly either. There's a path to follow. And that path is towards joy, which we'll talk about a little bit more. Okay. But I'd like to move to Terrible Week, part two. So conventional wisdom, suffering leaves us in the dark. God's guide, we are given a path to follow. I will say, this is a path that Jim and I took through Florida with our new baby. And there were alligators right on the side of the path. None of them ate us. I ran pretty quickly past the alligators. You guys all know what an alligator is? Like a Jim. Yeah, like
a crocodile.
It's bigger than a crocodile, and it might eat a baby. And so I kind of ran down the path, and Jim just happily looked at the alligators and walked along. So I don't know what that says about us. But I had the baby, so I felt as though. So the path is there, though the path's not always easy, okay? So you can sometimes see things along the path. Okay. There's a picture here. I'll explain it. That's me. That's my best friend, Kristen, over there. So terrible week, part two. So the bat fight happens, and then 2 days later, I'm driving to Iowa to see my best friend on the way to work at a camp for a couple weeks. And she has just bought her house. They have not even moved furniture into it. It's her first house. Neither of us had a house. We've been in graduate school for a million years. So she and her husband had moved there. So I get there, and Kristen's not home, but her husband, Will, is. And as soon as I open the door, Will yells from the upstairs, "Beth, can you come up here?" Which I thought, that's kind of weird. Like, I don't know what's going on here, but okay. So I come upstairs, and there's water running out of the ceiling. Like a good bit of water. And mind you, they've owned this house for 2 weeks. And he says, "What do you think's happening?" And I said, "I don't know, but have you checked the attic?" And he said, "No, I'm kind of scared of heights." And so he said, "Can you go check the attic?" I said, "Okay." So we pull down this ladder to the attic, and I climb up to the attic. And in the attic is an air conditioning unit to kind of air condition the house. It's strange to put in the attic. We usually put it on the lowest floor in the U.S., but it's in the attic. And it has water rushing out of it, but also the beams to it are like that. They're like a V. So I climb a little closer through this kind of rotting insulation, and the beams are completely rotted. And so I climb down the ladder, and I said, and he says, "So what's happening?" And I said, "I think your air conditioner is going to fall through the ceiling." And he said, "No, that can't happen. We just bought this house." And I said, "I think you should probably call someone right away." "Who do I call?" I was like, "I don't know. But you need to figure out. Call your realtor, call someone, and we'll sort this out." And so he calls someone. He says, "Well, someone can come in 2 days. I'm sure we'll be fine." I don't think so. And so Kristen, my best friend, comes home. And then, like, 10 minutes later, the air conditioner falls through the ceiling, which is, as you can imagine, like, huge. So there's insulation everywhere, there's metal, there's broken wood. They've just bought this house. So it's a huge disaster. So this is Kristen and I with their open ceiling where the air conditioner had fallen through. But it actually got a little worse because after all of this, at the end of the day, and imagine it's a long day because it was like 2 in the morning before we finally went to bed. Kristen says, "Oh, go use our shower. I have some really nice bath products in there." And I am blind as a bat when I don't have my glasses and I can't see anything like beyond here. So I don't pay any attention to the shower products. I just use them. And it turns out that it's coconut shampoo and coconut body wash, and I'm very allergic to nuts, and so including coconuts. So I come out of the shower, and I'm already swollen and broken out in hives all over. And so they're like red and rash, and I had to call a doctor and get emergency medicine. And so this was all... Again, and I've been bitten by a bat just 2 days before. So the doctor's like, "What's that on your leg?" And I was like, "That's a bat bite. And it's not connected." So just this other, and he's like, "You were bitten by a bat when you're doing this?" I was like, no, that was at my house.
I'm out there, rabies as well.
Yeah. So this is the terrible week. Okay, so that's a very bad week, part two. Okay, so we're going to carry on with the verse, okay? So the world view is that suffering wears us down. I felt pretty worn down, being like covered in hives, and I couldn't breathe very well because my tongue had swollen. And I think the world, that's what it thinks. Suffering just wears us down. It breaks us down. It makes things really hard and awful. But according to God, it doesn't have to be that way, that we can tell a different story about suffering. There's a different path. So I'm going to read the next part of the scripture. Because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. So I'm only going to give you one Greek word here. But the Greek word for perseverance also means the ability to stand firm. Suffering doesn't weaken us, this passage is saying. It strengthens us. So the testing of your faith, suffering, that's another way to interpret that, produces perseverance. So it makes us able to stand firm. So while the world sees suffering as being lost in the dark, God says, actually, there's a path to follow. While the world sees suffering as breaking us down, what God says is, no, suffering makes you able to stand firm. So as I was thinking about this and thinking about this talk, I used to be a runner before I had the baby, and I ran some marathons when I was in my early 20s. I'm in my 40s now, so I don't do that anymore. But one of the things I did while I prepared for the marathons was I did training runs. So sometimes my running partner and I would run 18 miles, and the runs felt terrible because your body isn't really supposed to go 18 miles on your legs. And so we'd run up these hills. I felt like we would say jello in the U.S., you'd say jelly in the U.K., so I felt all wobbly. Like, by the time I was done, I could hardly walk. I threw up in somebody's yard a couple of times. It's just sort of horrible. But that's what happens when you're training for a marathon. You're suffering, actually. But the suffering strengthened me. So when I started running, I actually ran because I was giving up playing football, soccer. I was a soccer player in college. And then I decided it was taking up too much time, and I needed to not do that. But I kind of needed something else to do or train for. And so some friends invited me to train for this marathon with them. And when I started running, I could probably only run 2 miles. And by the time I ran the marathon, I ran the whole thing, so 26 miles, 26.2 miles. So the training made me able to finish the race. So the suffering made me able to stand firm. So where my legs started out all wobbly, by the time I was done, I was not wobbly. I was able to make, run well and run fast. And so perseverance, the testing of your faith, produces the ability to stand firm. Okay, all right. That's me training for a run, actually much after. I'm not in my 20s there, I'm in my 30s. But it's a picture I could find. This is the Twin Cities Marathon. That's just a map of my run. Okay. Conventional wisdom, suffering weakens us. God's guide, suffering strengthens us. Okay? So these are things to think about, reframing how we view suffering. Okay. Maybe we'll come back to that picture in a moment. Okay. So, all right. The third part of this really terrible week, and it's the last part of it. I left Kristen's. My hives were starting to go away, to help out at a camp. And Emma's heard a little bit about this. But a friend had asked me to come help her at a camp she worked at full-time. And she asked me to come help lead a canoe trip for college students. And I'm pretty good kayaker and canoeist. And so I was like, that will be fine. And I teach at a university, and so college students, great, perfect. So I got there, and the schedule had changed, and so now instead of leading a canoe trip for college students, I was leading a backpacking trip for middle school girls, so which is 11 to 13-year-old girls, and I was backpacking and not canoeing. And so I was kind of like, oh my goodness, I don't know how this is going to go. This is not the age I work with, and also I hadn't backpacked in many years, so I wasn't terribly prepared. But the first day started out okay-ish. The second day was sort of okay. The third day, we were almost to our campsite, which was a place called Rest Peace Park. Very ironic. And it was raining. It was a pretty easy trail. There was two trip leaders along with me. I was a speaker. I had to change my notes for college students to 11-year-old girls. As you can imagine, it's not the simplest. So the girl, everyone stops because the leader is starting to tell them about the campsite. Like, here's what we're going to do when we break camp. You know, you guys are going to do intense. You guys are going to prepare dinner, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the girl behind me isn't watching. And sometimes, like, 11 to 13-year-old girls can be, not Naomi, of course, but some of them can be clumsy, like a little awkward, and this girl was that way. And so she didn't pay any attention that everyone had stopped, and she slammed into me. And we're wearing big backpacks, and we're standing on a cliff edge. And so I went flying over the cliff. So like 6 feet down, I landed on all rock. So that's like 2 meters down. And I broke both my collarbones, and then I shattered my shoulder into 30 pieces, and tore my rotator cuff off and cut through the nerves in my arm. So this was me for the next 5 months. So that was my, like, get-up that I had to be in. I don't know the picture. I don't. So that's what I looked like. And you can see it was quite an ordeal. They couldn't even put anything on my collarbones. There's nothing they could do about it because they had to hold my whole arm in place. So this is all in 1 week. So earlier in the week, I'd been bitten by a bat, and then I had gotten these hives, and now, like, I am a complete mess. And there's more to the story if you ask. The hospital didn't think I had anything broken, and so it took a little while to get diagnosed. They pulled my shoulder, and I screamed, and there was some things. Okay? I use this, I want to use this to talk about, consider it pure joy again, okay? So, verse 4 in this James passage says, "Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." So a conventional view on suffering is that it's random and even small things can break us. Okay, and so I give you that example of being my left shoulder, which is now fake. I have a fake left shoulder, and the top of my arm is also fake. So so the conventional view on suffering is like, it breaks us, you can never be whole again. My shoulder will always be fake, which is true. But God's view on suffering is different, okay? So it says, perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Interestingly, in the Greek, the word mature and the word finish are actually the same word. They're just two, like, different versions of the same word. And so it says, "But perseverance finish its work so that you may be finished," which is kind of, I'm sure the translators are like, well, that's a little weird. So maybe we'll give it a different synonym there. Finished and complete, not lacking anything. And so the word complete also means whole. So in God's upside-down kingdom, suffering doesn't destroy us. It prepares us so that we can be whole and finish the race that God has called us to. So I think about that marathon. So somehow that suffering, and we'll talk about more how it does this, but somehow that suffering helps us to finish. And that finish, of course, isn't only for ourselves. It's in ministry to others. So I'm going to recap where we are right now. So conventional wisdom, suffering destroys us. God's guide, suffering repairs us. I'm going to come back to that. So God's guide to suffering versus the world's guide. The world's guide, suffering, we're lost in the dark. It wears us down. It leaves us broken. You guys have probably thought these things or know people that think these things about suffering. I felt them, for sure. It's the opposite of joy. No good can come from suffering. But in God's guide to suffering, we have a path to follow. It helps us stand firm. It somehow repairs us and makes us whole. So this is a really different view of suffering. It's really an opposite view of suffering to what the world is. So this is where the joy comes in. God can work good out of suffering. And he does all of these huge things. He gives us a path. He helps us to stand firm. He repairs us and makes us whole. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about how God has worked good out of this suffering, and then we'll keep going, okay? So in a surprising turn, the terrible week actually did lead to some good things. Now I have like a really well-functioning fake shoulder. So I've had some problems with my right shoulder, but my left shoulder is fake. So it works just fine. But in better news, the night, the very night, Jim and I had dated and then had broken up and dated and broken up a couple times. I did a breaking up because I wasn't really ready. But in the middle of the night, on my way to the hospital, which was a long drive with all these 11 and 12-year-old girls in the back of the van, who were, well, first of all, when they looked over me, because I had fallen and I had a concussion, so I didn't wake up for a while, and they were like, "Are you dead?" And I was like, "I'm not dead." But in the van, they were,
dang.
I know, in the van, they were all hysterical. So, I'm with a bunch of hysterical girls, like, "Is she going to lose her arm?" And I'm hearing all these things, of course, feeling like, this is not helping. I finally said, "Could I have a little quiet?" And they were like silent then. And the other leader said, "Can I call anyone?" And I said, "Jim Wilder." I don't know why, at 2 in the morning, I was like, "I want to talk to Jim." And so Jim sees my name light up on the phone at 2 in the morning and thinks, "This is a good sign." A bad sign, but also a good sign. And so, if she's calling me at 2 in the morning, something is good. But also, that did restart our relationship. And then 6 months later, we got engaged, and 6 months after that, we got married. So it was good. And maybe if I hadn't had that bad fall, that wouldn't have happened. So here's a couple of wedding pictures of ours. And then we would have had Hallie. So, there's our cute baby. Which I had always wanted. This is another story for a different day, but I was 40 when we got married, and Jim was 38. And I had always wanted a child, and I didn't know if that was going to happen. So God used this, the terrible week. But one other thing that God did through this terrible week is he led me to my church community. So I was part of a really big church, and I called them and said, "Oh, I had this terrible accident." And they were like, "Oh, thanks for letting us know. We'll pray for you." And then I never heard anything from anyone at church again.
Wow.
But my next-door neighbors told somebody at their church I had this terrible accident, and I didn't go to their church. And their church, so the pastor from their church called me and said, "We heard you had a really bad accident. We'd like to bring food over to your house." And so people started calling me, and they said, "Well, can we set up a meal train?" And so they started bringing me food 3 times a week for 3 months, which is a lot.
That is a church.
And then, like, one guy said, "Oh, can I start taking out your garbage for you? Because I'm sure you can't do that." Another lady said, "Can I really, like, clean your house?" And so all of these people started coming over to my house that I had never met. And suddenly, by the end of it, by the time I could go to church, I knew almost the whole church because everybody from the church had been to my house at some point to like help me with something. They gave me rides because I couldn't drive. And so I found this, and I'd been praying for a church community, a good church community, the whole time I'd been in Michigan and had not really found anything. You know, my big church, I was involved as I could be, but it was 5,000 people. So, you know, I just didn't know anybody.
No.
So Jim and I ended up at this, then Jim too, ended up at this really lovely church. So God also gave me an answer to my prayers. The big answer, Jim, Hallie, church community, through these things that I would have never expected, you know, through all of this suffering, God worked. So he kind of did all these surprises. Okay. We're going to ask another question, though. So, what if I don't feel joy? So you've heard of some joy that came from the suffering. What if none of this seems to work? So I have some pictures here so you can see them. So this fall, we had another kind of period of suffering, which has only been 2 years, 2.5 years since I had five shoulder surgeries. So my last one was,
not long before we got married.
Not long before we got married, okay. So I had a year of surgeries to get everything back in place. This fall, we got pregnant pretty quickly, which was great, but I was sick the entire pregnancy, which that happens sometimes. We had a scare with Hallie because I had a blood clot rupture while I was pregnant. It's also a kind of scary thing. But I ended up getting, I ended up going to the hospital for a blood pressure check. That was it. I was supposed to just have my blood pressure checked. And they found out, what was the number? Was it?
184 over, no.
Yeah, 185 over
120.
So it's not supposed to be that high. Not nearly. And so I was supposed to give birth to Hallie in October, and it was August. And they said, you're going to have a baby now. And I said, well, can I call my husband? And they said, yeah, if he can get here fast. And then it ended up taking forever. And I ended up having to have an emergency C-section. And during part of it, I stopped being able to breathe because my lungs filled with fluid. So like a stone and a half of fluid. In English, 19 pounds of fluid. It's a huge number of fluid. And so my lungs filled, I couldn't breathe, I had to be in intensive care. Hallie was in intensive care, because she also wasn't breathing. Jim wasn't sure where to go, because neither I could breathe, nor the baby could breathe. So I was like wheeled through the hospital like they do on those emergency shows, where they're running, and I was like, oh no, and it's me, I'm in here, I'm in the bed. This isn't good. So this happened. So that's Hallie in the NICU, she's very cute. You can see a little picture of her. That's Jim holding her. She was connected to all sorts of cords and wires. Right after I got home from the hospital, I had kind of a spot on my face that I had asked the doctor about, and women get spots sometimes when they're pregnant, and so she wasn't worried about it. Jim said at the hospital, well, I was still there because I was in the hospital for weeks after this difficulty with all this fluid. Jim said, I think you need to get that checked. So actually, I left the NICU, I think this was maybe the day after I checked out of the hospital, or a couple days after. I went and saw Hallie in the NICU, and then I left to go get my face biopsy. This side, you can see a big kind of spot. And what I found out was that my doctor said it's probably nothing, actually, we found out that it was melanoma, and it was the most aggressive form of melanoma, so I was diagnosed with skin cancer. And that form of melanoma, when I first got my prognosis, also my arm, you can see, the first doctor said it's stage 4 melanoma, it's also level 4, there's 5 levels of melanoma, mine's 4.5, so meaning the most aggressive. And my prognosis improved a lot, so it's not this, but I did, my initial prognosis was I had a 22% chance of making it 5 years. So I had just had a baby. I'd been married for a year, and I had a baby home for like a day. And this is, you know, this is not the news that I was keen to get. And it felt like too much. And sometimes it still feels like too much because I still have melanoma. So I'm getting treated all the time, and the treatments have been very effective, which is great, except it made me tired. So that's part of the thing. I think for Jim and I, it felt like this is overwhelming. This felt more overwhelming than, you know, that terrible, crazy week. This felt like, well, I've always wanted to be married. I waited till I was 40. I've always wanted to have a child. Now I finally have this child after this long, stressful NICU stay. And then I got melanoma, and then Hallie started getting this spot on her face, and so right above her lip. And so we took her to the doctor, and the doctor said, I don't know what that is, but I think you need to see a specialist. So we took her into a specialist, and we found out she had a vascular tumor on her face. And so we went to a baby oncologist, team pelvis, and they said, if you don't do anything, it will grow to the size of a baseball on her face. And I had just been diagnosed with melanoma. I'm all like cut up. I had a 2-inch tumor in my face. So I had a literal hole in my face for months that Jim had to tend to. It was horrible. So so you can see some of these pictures. That's my face with the tumor in it. You can see all the kind of puffiness. This is me in the hospital right before surgery. This is how my face looked for a while. So I couldn't, I wasn't sure if I was ever going to be able to smile properly again, because they had to cut the muscles where I smile to take out the tumor. So this, it all happened, and then we find out that Hallie has a tumor in her face. And I was like, what are the chances? And actually, they're extremely low. The chances of getting melanoma in her 40s are low. The chances of her getting that tumor was like 0.3%. So it was like the possibility of that. was low. So sometimes we have these moments where things feel like too much. So what do we do? So there's one section of the verse that I left out, and it's this. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. But perseverance finishes work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And I think this is the phrase God gives us for when things feel like too much. When it's hard to remember, there's a path, and there's the possibility of joy. And that's that we have brothers and sisters. We have family. We found, because of my other kind of crazy shoulder thing, we had a church, great church community already. And so right away, when people found about us and about Hallie, they surrounded us. And we told them we needed help. We said, hey, this is really hard. And so we had people that would go sit in the NICU with Hallie when we needed them to, when I was in the hospital and couldn't see her. And we had people that would accompany us to appointments or make us meals. Jim said he never wants to eat lasagna in his life again.
So much lasagna. They always bring lasagna.
Yeah, it's too much lasagna. But we had people pray for us and care for us. And actually, lots of people have said to us, like, I don't understand how you can be so calm. And I think the reason we felt so calm is there were so many other people booing us, you know, helping us to feel like, okay, it's all right. We are not doing this on our own. And God is with us. And all of this community is with us. You know, the McClures reached out. Our friends, the Perrys from France. So there are people all over the world that have been praying for me and praying for Hallie these many months. I don't have any more slides. So that's one of the things I would say, is that when it gets to be too much, and as you can see, Hallie's face looks great. She finished her treatments a week before we got here. So she's doing awesome. But when it feels like too much, God has given us family. And he's given us other people. And those other people sometimes just help us remember there's hope. I found when I was having this experience that it wasn't the best when people would just be like, let me give you a verse. Because if I didn't already have a verse for myself, it was kind of too late. You know, I had things that God had given me already that I had stored up. But what was helpful was people that said, can I just come over and sit with Hallie for a little bit so you can go sleep? And I said, yes, like that would be wonderful. Or can I bring you a meal? Even last week, we had someone say, I know things have still, you know, you guys have still a lot going on. And this is really old lady in our church, probably close to 90. And so she came over with a meal. And we've learned to just say yes. If people offer, we say yes. Yes, thank you. One last thing I want to mention, and then we'll move on to a few questions. But this past year, I've read a lot on trauma and brain science while I was going through all this. Sometimes it's helpful for me to just read about something else. And there's a guy, there's several psychologists have found some interesting things. And one of those things is that connection with others can change the way that we process pain. And what is suffering? Suffering is pain over time and how we process it. Okay, how we process. Pain is happening over time. We can't control that. But how we process it is part of suffering. So connection with others makes us better able to process pain, process it in different ways. And actually, what some of the psychologists have found is that if you process pain in connection with others, it has less long-term effects on your body, even on your health. So, which is pretty interesting. But one other thing they found, there's a word that two psychologists I really like to read, Andy Colbert and Hillary McBride, talk about. They talk about a word called repair. And they say, they found that when there's a repair after our suffering, so a kind of what feels like a fix to our suffering, it changes our actual brain structure. So we process it differently. And what is a repair? A repair is seeing our suffering in a different light. So the repair is reframing our suffering so that we see it not as only a negative. So that's pretty interesting. And so God has designed our brains even that when we reflect on our suffering differently, and I would say when we reflect on our suffering biblically, it changes our big brain's ability to process it so that we suffer less. So very intriguing. God has not promised us that we won't suffer because we're in this space, this world, where darkness and light are fighting. So, you know, we get caught in the middle of it a lot. But he gives us all of these kind of tools and resources to change our suffering, to work it for good, and even to lessen the effects of it on us and in our bodies. So the last thing I kind of want to say is that God wants to rewrite our story with and in suffering. And not just to not have suffering, but to have joy. And that's an extreme difference, okay? So we're not just going to avoiding suffering. God doesn't just say, okay, I'll help you go from suffering to not suffering. He says, I'll help you go from way over here, not suffering, to way over here, joy. And if I can think of anything that's the opposite of suffering, I think it would be joy. That would feel like the opposite of suffering. And God gives us that possibility and says, you can lean into this. So I can't remember who, but someone in our group, I think it was Jadon, mentioned Silas and Paul rejoicing when they're in prison. And so how can you do that? Well, you can do that if you have a God that can transform suffering and can change it and can move. And so I don't know what suffering looks like for you right now or what your circumstances look like, but it can start this week. Your reframing, your rethinking, your connection with God can start this week. And it doesn't mean avoid suffering, but it might just mean telling somebody in community about it and taking a step towards saying, how can I process this with you? Or it might mean bringing it before God and saying, this thing is too hard. I don't know what to do with it. Or if you would like to, feel free to talk to Jim and I. We'd be happy to, both of us would be happy to, or either of us would be happy to chat with you more. He has more of the theology of suffering, being a pastor. And I can tell you some of this kind of experience of suffering, too. So I'd just like to pray for you. And then I'm going to, one more thing. We're not going to have group time probably today, but I'm going to give you some questions. And these are something that if you have a chance to just talk to somebody along the hike or at dinner about suffering, I would appreciate it. That would be great. So a couple of things. Do we have to be happy about suffering? Can we lament? Have you ever seen good come from suffering? I think stories of other people hearing good come from suffering can help encourage us. What's an area of suffering in your life right now or in recent years? And is there something that could help you in this suffering? And that's actually a question that one of my closest friends, Laura, regularly asks me. What can I do to help you? How can I help you in this? And I think that's a great question. So, all right, let me pray for you, and then that will be it for today. So, dear God, I thank you for everyone in this room. And I know that we've all had our own difficulties and pain and suffering. And that can look like a lot of different things. It can be physical, it can be emotional, it can be spiritual, it can be relational, social, psychological. And you are the healer. You have resources for us, God. And you gave us each other this week for a purpose. You placed each of us here, and maybe for a purpose in someone else's life in the room. So I pray that we'll be mindful of that, God. I pray that we'll be open. And I pray that you will give us joy, even in our suffering. Thank you for today. Amen.